being part of San Jose Taiko besides that.
Yes.
Was that touring with them around the country made us ambassadors of our culture in the 90s, in a time when people were just kind of getting used to that there were other folks in America, and going to some Midwestern states and cities, their only context for Asians was Bruce Lee. And so it was great because not only did they get to see this fun thing, you know, they got to see a lot of women perform and be strong and play drums. So the stereotype of the demure Asian woman was immediately changed. And so that was fantastic, you know.
Listen to this next Agile Vocalist episode. Agile Vocalist is a podcast and blog about sound and the performing arts with a California connection. Janet Kwaike is the founder of Rhythmics Cultural Works and the artistic director of Maza Daiko Ensemble. Her early training was with San Francisco Taiko Dojo. She went on to join San Jose Taiko's artistic staff.
She's performed with Keith Terry's Body Chalk, Theater Yujin, Anthony Brown's Asian Jazz Orchestra, and she's collaborated with Brenda Wong Aoki and Mark Izu. Her ensemble, Maza Daiko, was a featured artist at the 2015 North American Taiko Conference. In 2016, 2018, and 2022, she was the creative and music director of three immersive, multidisciplinary performance art productions called Island City Waterways. The productions celebrated the city of Alameda's unique waterfront history. They were collaborations with ODC Dance San Francisco, Epiphany Dance, 13th Floor, Maza Daiko, Gemelin Sakar Jaya, Akira Tana, Jeff Raz, Prescott Circus, and her husband Ed Holmes, who performs with San Francisco Mime Troupe. Janet has received the Girls Inc. Women Who Dare and Alameda County Arts Leadership Awards for her work as an advocate for the arts in her community. Her arts education background includes work with the Wolf Trap Institute, the Oakland Museum, and Cowell Performances.
Welcome, and welcome to myself, Janet Kwaike.
Very good.
Thank you for having me in your space here in Alameda, California. It's beautiful.
Well, it's lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you.
And your project is really wonderful. So thank you for having me be part of it.
You're welcome. Thank you for sharing. So I'd like to kick it off. Maybe tell us a story. How did Taiko come into your life?
I'll backtrack a little bit.
Okay.
In the sequence of things.
Sounds good.
So I came to Bay Area in the late 70s. I had a college degree in visual art. And I fell into the first wave of artists who were making studios in warehouses when nobody was doing that, taking a raw space and converting it yourself and learning how to sand floors and paint the rafters and put in plumbing and, you know, toilets and the showers and all that sort of thing, which was a great learning experience. And the community who came to live in that warehouse are still some of my best friends. I learned how to live in an art community. I learned how to have fun and make art. My education was, when I look at it now, was pretty minimal, and I had most of my education being in that environment. And I taught myself how to paint and print fabrics, and I created a textile fashion design company, which was pretty successful for a number of years, successful enough to be in Saks Fifth Avenue.
Nice.
But I moved on with the flow of what happens in life. And many of the friends that I met in that warehouse were performers. So I was introduced to all kinds of very avant-garde or, you know, kind of underground performance. I was drawn to music and movement, and that turned into tap dance, particularly jazz tap dance. So I learned about jazz and music while learning how to tap dance, and it was great. And I even taught, and you know, I was in a few different performance groups. But then I saw Taiko Dojo, San Francisco Taiko Dojo, performing with Rova Saxophone Quartet. And it was just so amazing to me to see that combination. And then I also got to see the players, and he had two very strong women who were playing. And I was just, I thought, this is what I want to do. It combines rhythm, movement, and my culture, which I had not explored very much in my upbringing in suburban San Fernando Valley. Mm-hmm. So it was just, this was the thing to do. Mm-hmm. So I studied with Taiko Dojo mm-hmm. for a little while. And then I took a break and got to go to Bali and on tour with Keith Terry and the first Body Chalk, which was also like such an incredible experience to be in Bali and perform and learn about that culture. Uh-huh. And then I came back and took a training class with San Jose Taiko, which appealed to me because they are a more peer-led group.
Okay.
So I did that and ended up joining their artistic staff in 1991, okay. which was the same year that I trained. And as part of San Jose Taiko, I learned to be part of a group, which I had never understood before, to be part of a whole instead of the individual artist saying, me, me, me. I am Japanese American. I grew up in a completely white community mm-hmm. and had the notion of being an artist, you know, an individual. Took a while for me to learn, and then I realized how much strength and power there was in giving over to that. Well, the moment that I had with San Jose Taiko yeah. that I realized how much power there was to yeah. the group was performing at the Sacramento State Fair every day for three performances a day next to the pig races and the barbecue.
Uh-huh. Right.
And we did it during the week. The staff was there for 5 days during the week. And then on the weekend, the rest of the group came up. And one of the members was a new member. Mm-hmm. And he got on stage, and everybody just poured their energy into him. And his awkwardness became confidence. And he was wonderful. And I realized we all did that together. You know, and it was a beautiful thing to see. And then in that, I think it was the same performance, because I was so elevated by seeing that I had one of my best solo experiences as well. So you give and you get.
And it sounds like it was sort of a rising tide effect, like the bolstering of him kind of spilled over into
to everybody. To everybody. There was one particular person there named Tony Yagami, who is just this big, boisterous, beautiful spirit uh-huh. who, when she got on stage, everybody smiled. Uh-huh. She didn't even have to do anything.
Right.
You know, she would just smile and hold her bocce up in the air, and everybody would love her. Uh-huh. And she taught me also really how to be generous with your energy and how to give. You know, we had, maybe 6 people during the week, and then on the weekends, maybe we had, 12 people
okay.
Kind of coming to give support. And on stage at one time, maybe probably everybody gets on stage at one time. It wasn't huge. 4 people play simultaneously and kind of do choreography moving between the drums at one time. And mm-hmm. then you have support drums in the back, and then that moves into solos and, you know, and back into everybody doing choreography. Some people are on percussion. Okay. And there's a lot of ki, right?
Yes,
ki right. is part of the way to give energy with your voice and your spirit. And
can you do a ki for us?
Yup.
Okay.
And
I mean, really loud, right?
Like it's, yeah, it's really loud.
But I mean, my background is a little bit in college is martial arts.
And
so I like that.
It's
that
the same
chesty kind of.
Well, and it's diaphragm.
Yeah, right.
Right,
absolutely.
And we use it to give people energy for cues.
Okay.
You know, it's like you can even set the tempo with a hup, don't,
okay.
you know, because then you know what the tempo is.
Okay.
You know what to.
Oh,
nice. And then when you're suffering because you're exhausted, then you ki just to kind of get yourself out of that. Being part of San Jose Taiko, besides
yes.
that,
yes.
was that touring with them around the country mm-hmm. made us ambassadors of our culture in the 90s, in a time when people were just kind of getting used to that there were other folks in America, and going to some Midwestern states and cities, their only context for Asians was Bruce Lee. So it was great because not only did they get to see this fun thing, you know, they got to see a lot of women perform and be strong and play drums. So the stereotype of the demure Asian woman was immediately changed. And so that was fantastic, you know. One of my favorite experiences was being on the Arsenio Hall show.
Oh.
And he was so embracive. The way he introduced us, you know, San Jose Taiko in my house. And you could feel that he understood, you know, he understood cultural expression. And then the antithesis of that was doing the Jerry Lewis telethon, where he introduced us doing his impression of the Japanese houseboy. And it took everybody's, or I could see everybody like,
Stiffing,
want
yeah.
to throw their
right.
sticks at him. But we didn't.
Yeah.
So it was a good thing, though, even then, because I think after that there were, I think I heard on, you know, KQED some complaints about that a letter was written, because somebody else, you know, they saw his telethon and they complained.
Oh,
and they thought, yeah. And so, you know, he's got to be held responsible.
Absolutely.
We did school shows, San Jose Taiko, which I was one of the, I was the coordinator of that. So if I can give you the quick school show version of.
Please do.
The word for drum in Japanese is taiko. It's made of wood from a tree, skin from an animal, and metal from the earth. So the spirit of the tree, the earth and the animal come together to create the spirit of the drum,
uh-huh.
taiko.
Uh-huh.
And when you play the drum,
mm-hmm.
you wake up the spirit inside. The bocce are made of oak, usually.
Okay. Is there a reason that it has
to be? It's a hardwood.
Okay, got it.
And you can make it nice and smooth, so mm-hmm. and it lasts a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they are considered the connection between heaven and earth.
Oh.
So when you play the drum, you're calling out to the gods. the Shinto belief, everything in nature has a spirit. So that is one way to ask with the Taiko for good harvest, rain, safe travel, a passage of a season.
Maybe life occasions?
Yeah, probably. I'm not totally sure about weddings. I do know, I mean, the Obon Festival is the big festival in the summer. It's similar to the Day of the Dead.
Oh.
In that it celebrates the ancestors.
Okay.
Lanterns are placed or hung, and they are either to guide the spirits of the ancestors to come, or even to hang out in, you know, a little house for them while they enjoy the dancing and the singing. And the taiko is always in the center. So it's the heartbeat, and the dance circles the taiko. There are Obon festivals all over, and San Jose Taiko has the one, you know, it's part of the San Jose Obon. There's one in Alameda. In the United States, it's one of the most celebrated festivals. And I love that it does give us a chance to remember our ancestors. Originally, it was used to delineate the boundaries of a village.
Uh-huh.
You had to be able to hear so that if you needed to come back, you would know. And it was used in battle to give courage to the warriors, and even used to scare evil spirits away.
Uh-huh.
In the imperial court, it was used with gagaku music, which is an incredible ethereal musical experience. I got to play with Mark and Brenda and Togi Sensei, who is a gagaku master, and that was just amazing. And music is not metered.
Okay.
It's in breath and feel.
Oh.
So I had to accompany his dance, and it was like you feel him step and settle and a little more, and then you start the next phrase. And so it was very different, organic, and difficult. He was wonderful, though. I thought, oh, this is going to be somebody that I'm going to be terrified of. He was just the sweetest man. So there you go, you know, imperial court music. But, and then it was used in the theater, kabuki and no theater,
okay,
to create sound effects. Kabuki, there are very specific sounds and instruments used with the different plays. So, you know, it's very, and you have to, you know, kabuki, you have to be part of the kabuki family, and it's a very, very stringent tradition. We have I'm not sure if it's, I don't think it's there anymore. No Space in San Francisco was started by a woman who was in a kabuki family, but because she's female, she could never excel in Japan. So she came here and started her own theater company. So that, yeah, so just interesting. I got to perform in one of her pieces, which was also difficult and interesting. My observation is that as an art form, taiko is very new.
Okay.
Relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I'm older, it's not as new.
Okay.
It was brought to this country by Tanaka Sensei, and kind of at the same time, Reverend Masakodani. And they started groups, one in LA and one in San Francisco, with very different focus. Reverend Masakodani's group was part of the Buddhist temple, and his intention was to gather community through the taiko, which is
okay,
a good way to use taiko. Taiko Dojo's emphasis was more on performance. And he's, I do think of Tanaka-sensei as a very original artist, you know. And so they brought it to the next generation of taiko players. And in the 70s, which was a little before my time of doing this, when different ethnic groups were kind of finding their voice,
yes,
the Japanese Americans were looking for a way to find their voice.
Yes.
And I think they gravitated towards taiko because it's loud, it's spirited, but it's, you know, it's not... It's joyous.
Yeah.
And the really kind of wonderful thing about that is that it came at a time when the women's movement had already was in place, so that a lot of third generation Japanese American women were drawn to it as well.
Mm.
And they found their voice. And that's who I got to learn from. PJ Hitabayashi being the founder of San Jose Taiko, and really unsung taiko player, because she didn't play for very long. Her name was Anna Lin, and she was at SJT. But learning from taiko from women, so different, because there was a different emphasis, not on just loud and hard and fast. There was a grace of movement and utilizing the whole body to
mm-hmm.
make a sound, because we're small.
Uh-huh. Oh.
So how do you do that? Well, you start with your arm up in the air and your bachi, knowing that gravity is going to help you make a bigger sound. And then as it goes down, you use your energy to make that sound fuller.
Mm-hmm.
And so what a joy to get to learn from these women, and there were other amazing women in the group too, and share, I don't know, I think it was a rare moment, because after that, a lot of women got started to play in North America, so it wasn't a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But the women who were in Taiko Dojo were amazing, but they still played in that harsh style, a very male style. Whereas this whole other way of playing evolved from San Jose Taiko, I believe. So this is, again, my personal bias.
Sure.
And Anna Lin not only was concerned with the movement between the strikes, so that you could see the rhythm,
right?
You know, hear and see the rhythm. But she really, for me, was concerned with the quality of the sound. So it wasn't just as loud as you could play. And in fact, there were all kinds of feelings that you get from a different sound from the drum. The idea that you can have people feel, see and hear is like pretty all-encompassing, you know. As part of San Jose Taiko, I think we did a workshop in a school for deaf.
Oh,
and
wow. That must have been.
And one of the exercises, you know, their teachers knew, they had balloons,
uh-huh.
and then they held the balloons, and they could feel.
Yeah,
besides in there, you can feel with your body too, but
of
they could feel it in their hands, and you could see them all smile, because it was like, what a sensation. This is like a different sensation,
uh-huh.
you know?
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful memory. So physical experiences in the body. Another aspect of sound that's really interesting to me is how it travels over distance.
Hmm.
Have you had any experiences where people have said, I heard this, you know, they were called from afar. Anything like that that you... Because
well, everybody wants us to do, like, oh, I'm having an event, and can you be part of what draws the audience to come? And it's like, I think because, you know, when you play so long, you forget the effect of that sound that you, when you first heard it. To train for both Taiko Dojo and San Jose Taiko, we had to run and do sit-ups and push-ups and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. I had never had upper body strength. So it was like, hey, I have, you know, biceps. This is really cool. Taiko starting in North America for Japanese American women who had more freedom than Japanese women in Japan, created a different model for people to look at for of women playing Taiko. And it has taken a long time, but progressively you can see in the last Kodo tour that they feature this absolutely, you know, beautiful woman, young woman as a soloist, and she kills, you know. I'm sure there were women in the last 20 years who also could have done that, but they're allowing for that. And she also exudes joy instead of that, just the intensity, which is amazing too.
Right.
But there's a different element. It's not like she's less intense, but when she smiles, you see a woman, and there's just something different about that energy. And she does smile, which is doesn't happen that
doesn't
much.
Happen. I was just going to say
for their performances, it does in some of their pieces, but not as much.
So you've been involved for how many years with Maza Daiko as the founder?
Maza Daiko's first performance was at the grand opening of Rhythmics Cultural Works. And to go back a little bit to the history of Rhythmics Cultural Works, began with Rhythmics Ensemble, which was formed after I left San Jose Taiko, and it included Taiko, Cuban drumming, African drumming, Middle Eastern drumming, Brazilian drumming, had different personnel at different times. Carolyn Brandy was part of that ensemble. And we created a show that we did regular concerts, and then, you know, we as musicians wanted to make some money. So we created a school show, which was picked up by San Francisco Symphony's Adventures in Music, which meant we went to every school in San Francisco, plus being part of young audiences. So our intention with the show was to play percussion and song from all these different countries and then mix them together, the rhythms together. So that's why we were called Rhythmics. And we would explain the cultural drumming separately and then play together. And I think it was really worked well for kids, because when you go out into schools, you're looking at a huge demographic range of ethnicity. And so they might see who their family is part of, and they might not, but they saw all of these different colors and that they can play music together.
That's
so
awesome.
And so from that, we wouldn't it be great if there was a place where different cultural music and dance could perform? And I had the opportunity to purchase this building, which took 5 years to renovate. And then we had our grand opening in 2007. And at the same time, just getting started with Maza Daiko. So I think we played a couple of songs. And from then on in, we became Rhythmics's house band. We played at our events and did a lot of collaborations. We did usually one big collaborative concert a year. We performed with some of the Kodo artists, Yoko Fujimoto, their singer, who sings like a, you know, a mysterious bird. just amazing. And then, and she's just tiny, skinny, beautiful, fragile, and this huge voice. I was like, where is that coming from? Chieko Kojima is their dancer. She's very well known for her rendition of Hachijo, which is a two-person drum piece.
Okay.
We did collaborations with Gamelan Sekharjaya, with Own Ensemble, which if you're not familiar, I don't know if they're still together exactly, but they also, I really feel, were pioneers in taking taiko into a musical direction. And then in around 2015, we added marimba and violin. And I feel like that's when we found our voice, because, well, all of our music has always been original, but the melodic instruments filled in the space between the rhythms. And where the drum kind of stirs the soul, the melodic lines stir the heart. And even the marimba is a percussive instrument, so the violin made a big, big difference. And then we, besides the collaborations we did get to, and I was very honored to get to perform at the NATC, that was an honor to get to do that and present taiko with the marimba and violin, and I think it had mixed response. Some people loved it, and I've been wanting to do something like that in our group, and some people like, that's not taiko, you know. But it was interesting, and I was happy to do that. I felt like, okay, we shared our version of taiko with the larger community.
When we spoke earlier, you talked about how, to you, taiko is a vehicle for story. Can you say more about that?
Yes. In 2015, I began the Island City Waterways project, in which I really started to understand what it was to be a community artist. And I am proud to be a community artist. I had spent many years working with First Voice, incorporating taiko into storytelling. I had that experience. And then my husband, Ed Holmes, was a longstanding member of the San Francisco Mime Troupe.
Oh.
So I watched that theater every summer. And they always had a great band.
Okay.
Who also did the sound effects. And,
oh, wow.
You know, so I saw that.
Uh-huh.
And I saw how it affected the story. So the first Island City Waterways was in Island City Waterways, how did you get here? It took a journey from the Fruitvale Bridge to the Park Street Bridge along the estuary, which was dug, man-made.
Right.
And so the birth of Alameda as an island city. And how did you get here? Everybody has come from somewhere else. Even the first people came from somewhere else.
Right.
And so that we're all immigrants. Mm-hmm. So we gave honor to the immigrants who settled here early and did different things. And I got to work with Epiphany Dance. And she's an expert at site-specific work. So I learned a lot about the flow and, you know, how to do that. And Ed was... he's a beautiful wordsmith, so he distilled the history down into beautiful small chunks of text. There was a boat there, and they came, and that's where they tie up their boat, and they practice. So they showed up, and then we said, hey, would you like to be in a show? So we managed to get them to commit to do this so that three of the dancers actually boarded the dragon boat after doing a dance with the whole ensemble, and drums are going and, you know, violins playing, and then they get on. They're representing the promise of going to a new country, of finding a better life. Uh-huh. And they board this dragon boat, and then they paddle them out the estuary. And they did that 11 times, which required a lot of paddlers.
And so this is Island City Waterways, but uprooted is part of the title of that.
No. There were three.
Okay. Oh, okay.
And so this was in 2016.
Okay.
When the first one.
Okay.
And this one was, the subtitle would be, How Did You Get Here?
Oh, I gotcha. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And that was with Epiphany Dance. Ed and I worked on all three of them, and Mazza Daiko performed in all three of them. 2022 was Island City Waterways Uprooted, which took place on the former Naval Air Station in Alameda, and the history of that land. And that starts with the uprootedness of flight, of the wonder of flight, and the pioneers of flight. And we emphasize some of the women who had amazing stories. And then Bessie Coleman, who the airport's named after now, and they told their stories, which were not only hard because they were women pilots, but they were of color.
Right.
So that was kind of special, being uprooted to be in the air and the wonder of flight. But then World War II broke out, and that land, which was just used for, you know, flight, turned into the Naval Air Station. Mm-hmm. And so to talk about that, we did a story about Jimmy Doolittle, who is an Alameda local hero who led the retaliatory flight to Japan in retaliation of Pearl Harbor. And it was definitely a heroic flight. They were not going to have enough fuel to make it back to the aircraft carrier, so many of them landed in China, and most of them survived. The Chinese protected them. But a story that came out in more recent years is that the Japanese decimated villages in China looking for those pilots. So 60,000 Chinese died as a result of that. And, you know, we did this with Taiko and a news reporter kind of conveying the information just to show war is bad. It doesn't matter what country you're from, and everybody has their turn at being awful, you know.
Right.
So then my husband, Ed, was in the Navy and came to the Alameda Naval Air Station as part of his duty. So he tells his story of being part of the Vietnam War. There's a big jet, fighter jet out there on the base, and it's from the Vietnam era. Wow. So we did that out there. So again, story comes out of the land. And then right when that finishes, you see the ODC dancers with their suitcases ready to go off to internment camp. Another result of that war. And Kimi Okada and Brenda Way choreographed this dance of moving the luggage, that just beautiful, just beautiful. And the sound design was created out of letters that Kimi's mother had written while she was interned. Wow. And Bean worked with her and recorded those letters and combined it with sounds of daily life, sounds, you know, music of the era, some Taiko for dramatic effect, and it was just a beautiful piece. And everyone was taken to a little more remote area, kind of an abandoned area of the Naval Air Station, lots of weeds, little metal structure that became the stage area. And if you look at the video of it, watching the people coming and just to come and see the piece, it's like they've come to camp too, internment camp as well. So they're making the journey with the artist to this, you know, where am I? What's going on here? And I have never done a show. So it's a new experience for me to have people crying at the end. But it was very moving. So that happened. Then the war is over, you know, because we don't want to leave them, you know, feeling that horrible. Right. War is over, you know, couples reunite, and Akita Tana has a swing band, you know, playing A-Train and swing music of the era.
Yes.
And a number is done about that. But then we do, the final piece is called Heart of the Mountain, which refers to Heart Mountain internment camp. And Ed gives a little introduction, you know, that he take this moment to reflect on the stories you heard today and about your own uprooted experiences.
Yeah.
And then after the show, we had recorded stories from the Alameda Point Collaborative, who are 500 formerly homeless people who are housed on the Naval Air Station.
Okay.
And we recorded some of their stories of being uprooted, which if you are interested in that, that's like some of these stories were, they spoke so clearly and they were heart stopping. So, you know, after the show, you can do that, but take this moment just to reflect. And we played marimba violin that led into, you know, 9 taiko players on 18 drums. And 1 8-year-old boy told us that the drums told the whole story.
Inspiring. Get liner notes, guest photos, subscribe to the newsletter, and more at agilevocalist.com.